Welcome to Cloud Foundry Weekly, your source for all things Cloud Foundry. This week's episode, we are deep diving with Spring Cloud Dataflow and Deshaun Carter. Please enjoy the show.
All right, let's go live. Since our thing's not working. But hey, yep. Hey everyone, welcome to the next installment of Cloud Foundry Weekly.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Yeah.
Happy Thursday.
Yes.
Happy Thursday. And this time we're not even going to do introductions. We've got a man that needs no introductions. Deshaun, how you doing, buddy?
Hi. I'm having a great day. Started off great. It's continuing to go great. I love hanging out with you guys. The few minutes that we had before the show, I love hanging out with you guys. You're doing so much for the community and for the workloads and getting these to production. Just thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm jazzed to be here.
It's almost a little sad that we didn't have the outtake of the pre-show when we were talking. There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like it's fun to get together with people that are doing amazing things and sharing stories, right? We get to work with customers all over the globe and it's always fun to share stories like, hey, what's working? What's not? That's an important part, right? We can hear for days all the things that are working for our customers. Sometimes it's also good to say, you know what? My customer ran into a brick wall. Here's what they were doing. And share the things that don't work.
We've learned. Yeah, that's one of the things we've been playing with. We'd like to get some customers on to come in and share their stories of what they're doing with Taz and, you know, what's the good, the bad, the ugly, right? Even tell us the parts that aren't working for them. Let's get that out there and get people talking about. Because like you said, there may be a problem that you hit that somebody in the community is going to jump in and say, well, here's how you fix that. We hit this back in 2009, right? So.
Yes. There's so much. And here's another thing. For those of you that don't know, Cloud Foundry is special because of the data. This is the big differentiator, right? We can do stateless workloads. We can do that all day. We've been doing that for a long time, actually. And there's a lot of ways to deliver that. But the data piece, right? We can talk CF push, but CF create service, ooh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is nice. CF create service. I can't think of anything that's done anything like that. I used to deliver workshops. Maybe we said this on my last visit here. I used to deliver workshops to 40, 50 plus engineers. And in that workshop, we asked the question, how long does it take you to provision a database inside the org? Like on your laptop is one thing, but how about beyond your laptop? How long does it take to provision a database or any right service? And you know, hands go up. And what does that process look like? Oh, we got to do a ticket, and it might be week, 2 weeks, or even days, but never is it minutes,
right?
And one of my favorite things was to be in this workshop and to have that conversation first and then say, okay, the next step in our workshop is we're all going to provision databases. And the platform engineers, they were never in the room, but I always got to go back and tell them. I always got to go back and tell them. And I would prepare them, right? Like, hey, we're going to create 100 databases because their default was leader, follower, pair, right? They didn't have a plan smaller than that. If you're going to build a database, you're going to bring something to production, right? We all know about the little piece of, hey, our business is running on this thing that was created by somebody, you know, 5 years ago. It's going to end up in production, right? That's the expectation. No matter how small you think it is and, oh, it's just temporary, it's going to end up in production. So they said, hey, leader, follower, pair, that's the minimum that we're doing, period, because we don't want to do this dance again.
Right.
So, you know, in a room full of 50.
Well, and that's one of the things, you know, Cloud Foundry changed how people use data. Everybody was used to these great, big, huge databases. They were used to these huge data stores. And when Cloud Foundry came along, create service came along, you were able to create MySQL instances that stuck with your app. Now it's, you know, they kind of say, well, your app, you know, the data that goes with your app, you want to keep that small. We took that microservice architecture and we took it to data, but you still got to move the data. The data is still going to have to get transacted. It's still going to have to get moved to someplace else, maybe to a data lake or something. And I think that's what we're going to talk about today, right?
We're going to talk about data. There's all sorts of things. We're going to talk about data. We're going to talk about like how easy it is to stand up this infrastructure. Again, that workshop. Everybody, hey, hit the button. We're going to deploy on our infrastructure hundreds of databases in minutes. Like, how else do you do that? How else
and
do
you can do it databases constrained to an app. You can do it constrained to multiple apps. You can share the database, but you're no longer stuck in that portion of where all the databases are huge and where, hey, I need a schema that's going to be a little bit different than my neighbor's schema, but we can't do it because it's going to mess everybody else up. Now you're able to constrain that data to an application, gives developers a lot more flexibility, gives them a lot more options.
It's so good.
It is.
It's at the fingertips of the hands of the developers just to do that, just like they can do with CF Push. I think that's the biggest thing too, is that they don't have to submit one or 14 tickets to get these services either as well.
But yeah, I wondered if Cloud Foundry actually like upset a lot of infrastructure teams, right? Because now that's some of their job was going in and provision. Well, it may take you a month or two to get a database provisioned. Well, now here comes Cloud Foundry and says, we don't need to do all that. You can provision this thing in 5 minutes and have your database up and running. I wonder if that upset infrastructure teams or if they liked the fact that they got less tickets.
I can say that it did. It absolutely did upset infrastructure teams and upset people. And I know that, right? The cool thing is at the time, anybody says, hey, I'm going to take your job, or I just automated your job. Anytime that happens, there's going to be some feelings. But 9 times out of 10, if that happens, hopefully you're in a position to do something more important for the organization that you're in, right? That we're taking away something we can automate. We're taking that away, but we've opened you up to do more valuable work. Be more productive.
Well, not only valuable for the developer, but it's also for the lines of business. If you're waiting a month or two to get a database before you can push your app out, your competitors already put their app out and now you're late to the game. So, you know, the quicker you can get your app out there, the quicker that the line of business is going to have, you know, that kind of head start on their competition. If you delay that for whatever reason, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. You're actually creating problems for yourself if you can't get apps and code out quickly.
Time to market matters.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch the event yesterday, the Tanzu Strategy event yesterday?
I did. Yep.
James Waters brought up one of our customers that created a whole new line of insurance in 45 days. Is that what it was?
Yep.
Even if it's 3 months, right? There are other teams, there are other companies that are still waiting for their database to be provisioned, mm-hmm. right? In that amount of time. In those organizations, right? Once they've got a database or a VM or something provisioned, what do? They hold on to it. I know this took me 3 months to get. I'm going to hold on to it.
Right.
Because they don't know when they're going to get another one. So they do this not great practice of holding on to resources they don't necessarily need because it takes so long to provision new ones, even if it's a different shape or form than it was. But the data is important, right? The stateless workloads are great, but the data is important. And that insurance company that was able to provision things and generate this new line of business, like there was some value to having, right? Generating a new product line, a new line of business, it's going to probably be some data services under there, right? There's probably some stuff that their CF create service, and probably more than one, right? It's probably not all running on Postgres.
Well, and it doesn't matter what you look at. I mean, we always talk about the code and how that's important, but really it all comes down to the data underneath. That's what applications are doing, is they're either collecting, they're transacting, they're moving data in a way that helps the user or it helps the company. And people tend to forget that, you know, really data is the bedrock of which every application runs. You know, even when you start talking, you know, the little games you play on your phone, even those have got data behind them. And it's an important part. They don't run without it.
Yeah. Now, this microservice, cloud native, you know, having a single data store backing your application makes all sorts of sense. If you've ever been in that shared schema where you can't change this column because somebody else is using it in a different way, which we already talked about, if you've ever been in that situation, the idea of give me my own database that my app is going to talk to, and I don't need your data, I don't need the rest of your schema, let me go this way. Like, that's exciting. Spring Boot makes standing up something like that super easy. Spring Boot, Spring Data, plus a CF create service. Like, I could do this all day long. You know, you tell me 15 different microservices that you want and I can do it. And because it's been so easy, it makes sense. Like, I can do it and we can keep on going. So we've got this kind of explosion. it's not hard to get new things into production because we've got Spring Boot. We've got Cloud Foundry. And a lot of things, right? For me, this journey where we're at today is I spent a lot of time asking myself, like, why are you still doing batch? I have all of this cool new stuff. I can do it reactive. I can do all this cool new stuff with Spring Boot. Why would I still be doing batch? And it took me a long time to realize that there are just some workloads that they're not on my radar because they've been holding the company up for decades. Right? There are workloads that were created in the 70s, right? Move. Let's talk about insurance companies that have been around for 100 years, right? That they were running on mainframes, running on those computers. And now they've grown up a little bit, but there's still those batch loads. The ETL processes are holding up a lot of the companies that you and I all rely on. And it took me a long time to figure that out.
It's the exact same way you look at, you know, every company has that one server way back in the corner of the data center that's got duct tape over it. The big sign says do not touch because it's been running for 33 years and nobody's
we don't know
they're afraid
that
they sneeze on it.
Yeah, but do not touch it.
Yeah, if you sneeze on it, the whole company's going to go down. We've got applications that do the same thing. We've got applications out there that, you know, we've got this big push right now for Spring, you know, upgrade your Spring version, upgrade your Spring Boot. We've got applications that are out there that are still in the early days of 2.x, right? So, you know, that is stuff that's important is you're making sure that you're updating your applications, that you're keeping things up to date and taking advantage of all this new stuff that we've got coming out. You know, projects are changing on a daily basis and application developers, some of them are keeping up. A large majority of them aren't.
This is real. This is real. One of the things that I think about when I think about Cloud Foundry, I think about cloud native, I think about production ready, you know, enterprise grade. I think about all the value that lives in this box where I can just do a CF push. And the developers aren't doing CF push, right? They're still building stuff locally, but that concept of here's my code, go run it for me. I don't care. I don't care where it lands. Just go and run it for me. That concept, it used to feel like, oh, it's only allowed for 12-factor applications. That was like, oh, if you're going to Cloud Foundry, you're doing 12-factor. It's got to be microservice. It's got to be distributed. You have to have the config and the Eureka discovery and all that kind of stuff. But you don't, right? We learned that as we're doing this, you have the monolithic database somewhere or application somewhere. And there's patterns. We're all going to be modernizing something even 20 years from now. We are all going to be modernizing something that we took to production today. But the importance of maintainability has changed, right? We just had that recent XZ backdoor, right? This idea like, hey, software, the patch came out quickly, but it was that, hey, here's some open source software that made its way out into the world with bad actors driving it. How many customers, how many people, how many orgs are not aware of that yet? Right. How many orgs are on that still? Oh, it hurts my heart a little bit. 6-month release cycle, 6-month patch cycle. Oh, that's fine. Well, we do a round of patching every 6 months. Like, how many orgs are still going to be exposed to this thing that came out last week? Because they're still on this old mindset. Software needs to be maintained. Maintainability is important. We're always going to be modernizing. But Cloud Foundry, again, it came in and it changed my mind on a lot of things that I'd kind of taken for granted, a lot of assumptions that I'd made. And it's this data tier. Another model that I have for Cloud Foundry is like, not even for apps. Like, consider there's a few customers that are doing it really, really well where Cloud Foundation or Cloud Foundry is a data foundation. The way that you get data services provisioned inside of your org, they all land on Cloud Foundry, mm-hmm. right? Apps can consume from that data foundation from all over the place. It doesn't have to be Cloud Foundry, but that data foundation that can handle the lifecycle management of your data services, can handle the workloads that are needed, right? If you're deploying these smaller databases, cool, we can do that. Again, apps can be deployed easily. But what about these ETL batch processes that take 24 hours to run?
Right.
Or even 8 hours to run? What about those? Where do you run those? And do you provision infrastructure 24/7? Do you leave that infrastructure running for these things that take 8, 10, 24 hours to run? When cost matters, when you have something that can scale up and scale down, including your data services.
Well, and I think, you know, that was something we were talking about in pre-show is ETL. It's not the sexiest thing in the world. You know, nobody grows up and says when they're a little kid, I want to be an ETL guy when I grow up. But, you know, when we look at data and we look at the transaction and the movement of data, it's like the Excel of business. At some point, everybody's ran their business. They've ran their processes on Excel. ETL is one of those things. It's just a core function that has to be done. And I think you were saying, you know, now all the guys that are doing ETL, they're like, haha, look at me. I'm the important guy.
They are. And those, that audience, that group loves Cloud Foundry, right? They would love to be able to get rid of the hand-me-down servers. Oh, you're just doing ETL. You can have the servers that we rolled out of production. Right. You can have those. And in 3 years, you can have these ones that we're running in production today. They get those hand-me-down infrastructure. But again, business is moving faster. Data is more important than ever. Those same engineers, they're really important these days. Again, not just because those workloads, those batch processes, and other, those things have been holding up the company for decades. But now, we've been talking about it here, the AI movement, all of this data that's happening, that's moving, even if it's in a batch mode, that's moving every single day, all the time, has become much more important because of AI, because of the things that we can glean and pull from that data. And now, we have batch processes. We have these stateless workloads we had forever. This concept of a Cloud Foundry data foundation. What do we do with that? Well, some organizations, some of the brightest and best are aware of Spring Cloud Data Flow. Like, what is that? What is that? Like, I just remember my first experience with Spring Cloud Data Flow, much like my CF Push, where I was like, this is a game changer. Mm-hmm. I watched as somebody pulled a workload and connected a source to a sink and was making these amazing pipelines, right? I was aware of ETL and that process, right? These ETL workflows, pipelines that are running that some manager is running. And you've never met that person, but they are very important to your organization. There's big money, big things happening based on what's coming out of those ETL processes. But now this ability has been handed over. Spring Cloud Data Flow makes it so that we can do this. It's got a nice UI. I like to call it the UI for Spring Batch because it's got a lot of these cool features.
Well, so let's back up just for a second. So Spring Cloud Data Flow, project that we've got today, but this came out in what, like 2016? This was a reinvention of Spring XD, right? Yes. Extreme Data.
Yep.
And I think so Spring Cloud Data Flow went to address what we were seeing kind of as the limitations of Spring XD and that it was kind of monolithic in nature. You know, it was a very big project that you had to run. And so it kind of came about to break that up into different, you know, conjoined parts and modules. Am I right on that one?
Absolutely. Right. With this data movement has been going on for years. And yes, it started with XD. Great callback. And it turned into Spring Cloud Data Flow. Fantastic. What else do we know about Spring Cloud Data Flow? Should we pull up a website and kind of show it off, introduce it a little bit?
Absolutely. So do we want to, so you got something you want to show? We've got like the project guides and things of that nature that we plan on showing at the end for people, but.
I'm going to share a screen. This one.
Well, he's sharing. I'm interested, Nick. I mean, we're talking about data as the world, and anybody that doubts that, all they got to look at is your favorite topic, you know, Gen AI, and right?
Yeah.
Data's running everything nowadays. So what's your take on it?
I think it's a really interesting take on something that's such a, I guess, embedded practice within like large organizations or probably most organizations these days. So I used to work for a retailer. And, you know, when I started there in I want to say 2008. I don't know, but I started working on a green screen application that was older than I was at the time. And to this very day, I still believe that that same application is still, you know, one of the top 10 mission critical applications for that business. And it would be, if it would ever went down, you know, major things immediately happening, like in the real world type of thing. And that was, you know, very, very much glued together about, you know, batch processes, mainframes, all this interweaving of different, you know, almost decades of technology, right? That it's very critical. And especially now, this day and age, we have this crazy generative AI at our fingertips, and that needs data. So I'm pretty interested to see this topic going forward, to see how we can utilize like Spring AI, you know, Spring Dataflow, some of these other Spring projects, and wire them into, you know, some of our newer projects within Cloud Foundry and the Tanzu ecosystem.
So let's,
and
go ahead.
I was going to say, and, you know, let's not look at data. You know, data is not just data. This stuff can be life-saving, right? So I worked for a company, a healthcare company. They created an AI project to let you take a picture of your medicine to tell you what it was. Who goes into their medicine cabinet and they got these bottles of pills that they don't know what they do anymore? The fact that somebody can go in and they're using that data to take a picture of a pill and tell them what it is, what the side effects are. I mean, some of the stuff that we've got coming out is life-saving. It's groundbreaking. It's not just trying to help a business make money. It's actually helping people, and data's at the center of all of that.
I love that you did that callback. Healthcare is, you know, a real important spot here. One of the customers I used to work with, what I would always say is, like, there's fetal heart rate monitors connected to this Cloud Foundry Foundation. Mm-hmm. Right? And I consider myself a pretty good engineer, and I've done DIY for dozens of works, right? I've built my own platform, but there's value in open source and understanding kind of lay of land, but there's also value in having a commercially supported product. And that's one of those cases. There's a fetal heart rate monitor, meaning a tiny baby connected on the other end, connecting to this foundation. And I don't really want to go with a DIY solution for something like that. If something goes wrong, I don't really want that. So this is kind of one of those lines where I'm comfortable on both sides of the commercial open source, mm-hmm. you know, DIY. I'm very comfortable on both sides of that conversation, but some use cases, you know, whether it's mandated or not, some use cases just really kind of maybe need a little bit of extra support. I believe in you as an engineer, but yeah, there's just some of those use cases where maybe it's a good idea to, yeah.
Nothing beats that 12 a.m. call where a foundation's down and you need to get somebody on the phone. I love OSS. It brings in a lot of innovation, but relying on the community, relying on Stack Overflow and things like that to get your answers, they don't help you when you get that call from your CTO in the middle of the night saying, hey, we're down and you need to fix it.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about data, right? This is where I'm excited about Cloud Foundry. I talked about this concept of a data foundation and this, what do we call it? Renaissance of the ETL engineers, mm-hmm. right? Where they're coming in strong. They're like, we've been here. We haven't gone. Don't call it a comeback. They're riding high right now because the amount of data that's flowing through our organizations it's not going to slow down. It's not going to stop. It's not going to reverse. It's only going to increase. And we need to handle that sometimes in batch, but sometimes real time is important as well. Right. And again, in my background, when I look back, there was a lot of times like, why batch? Like when you could be doing all of this real time, like just connect it. But there's always a trade-off, right? If I've got the recent billion row challenge, if I've got a billion rows of data that are coming in over the course of a day, do I want all of that real-time infrastructure running all day? Or am I saving myself millions of dollars by collecting all of that, processing it once, maybe in 8 hours, or in the case of the billion row challenge, I think it was like 1.2 seconds. what is that trade-off, right? Because if it only takes 1.2 seconds to handle the billion rows, did I really need that infrastructure to be real-time and up all day?
Right.
We have these trade-offs, which brings me in my little journey to Spring Cloud Dataflow. This is kind of this end point for all of these workloads where I can actually connect the dots at the data tier without needing an application to do it, right? There's a lot of times where an application is getting data from one, somebody creates an event and they spit it over to another microservice that consumes that event and does something else. A lot of what we're doing with this event-driven microservices can actually be done with these Spring Cloud Dataflow pipelines. So I wanna share, can we just point to the dataflow.spring.io? This is just, consider it a UI. It's got some nice features. It allows us to kind of drag and drop. So I can deploy a catalog, a library of functions that I can connect and stream together to build these interesting workflows. But it doesn't have to be just like one end-to-end workflow. I can connect the dots to multiple. I can have data going in multiple directions, but being also, tied together with multiple data sources. It could be logs. It could be an FTP server. I know Josh Long did an FTP to email transfer. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the samples that is out here. Like, who knew how much work was still being done over FTP, SFTP these days? Who knew? Massive, massive amounts of work are still being done over SFTP. All the work that I did over the years with Spring integration, a lot of that work could be done with Spring Cloud Dataflow, where I'm literally just connecting inputs and outputs. And I have a nice interface where I can drag and drop and I can watch these workflows. So this is a product, Spring Cloud Dataflow. There's an OSS version, there's an OSS. You can take it for a spin. If you've ever been faced with, how do I get data from system A to system B? How do I get data from this data source and make it available to not just one, but maybe 8 lines of business at the same time? Or how do I get the batch results? That 1.2 second billion row batch result, how do I get that out to 100 different orgs? And this is it, this is the solution. All I wanted to do today was I wanted to kind of paint a picture of the way, the amounts, the types of data, and it doesn't just stop at databases. I've seen amazing things done with just logs, right? Piping and parsing logs. There's so many cool use cases, and it'd be a shame to try to go into it, but this is the product, it's open source. But it also plays really well with Cloud Foundry, right? With TAS. Mm-hmm. There is a tile that makes it so I can stand up Spring Cloud Dataflow. I think it actually stands up a messaging, a RabbitMQ and a Postgres along with it. And I can start playing and it goes easily. But beyond that, I can shut it down. I can run it on my laptop. This is a big thing, and I think it's still a big thing. The idea of having access to all these things, especially when they're open source, I can have it on my laptop and I can expect it to run and behave the same way when it's in production.
Well, and everybody knows I'm not a developer, but I remember playing in Spring Cloud Dataflow. And one of the things that I thought was cool was making these pipelines by literally clicking and dragging your connections to each object that you wanted. It was graphical in nature, and it was just as easy. There wasn't a whole lot of coding. You put them in there, drag and drop, watch the pipeline run.
Yeah. I mentioned, I think of it as the UI for Spring Batch. Mm-hmm. So Spring Batch it's cool. It provides kind of all of those best practices for batch workloads. A lot of times, and probably the ETL engineers, they said, hey, like, this is what I need. I need to know how long each row took, how long each chunk took. I need to know which ones failed out of the billion that I just ran. I don't want to get to 999,000 or 999 million, 900,000 and fail and have to do it all over again, right? These things have developed over the years and they've been componentized. They've been abstracted and built into Spring Batch. That's awesome. But those same ETL engineers, they had a user interface. They knew what their workflows looked like. They wanted to have that same thing. And again, this Spring Cloud Dataflow UI did that. It allowed both. I could generate those workflows, and I could also describe those workflows to the rest of the organization, to the leadership. Here's what it looks like. Here's what we're doing. Just
well, and awesome. When we start talking about microservices, you know, everybody's wanting to go microservices and bring those in. Spring Cloud Dataflow is one of those products that helps you orchestrate all those microservices together. You know, I've got, you know, microservice A doing something. Its output needs to go to B. How do you orchestrate? How do you wire that in? That's something where Spring Cloud Dataflow can help as well, right?
Absolutely. You have, it's another tool that I'm trying to put into your tool belt. I want audience to think about a different way, right? You don't have to have a microservice acting as the source sink or processor for all of these workflows. There's a better way. And I'm just trying to put the tool in your tool belt. There's another step where we've got to realize, do we have the right tools in our tool belt? Do we know how to use them the right way? Mm-hmm. There's power, but with great power comes great responsibility, right? So we have just another tool that's in your tool belt, built on top of all of the experience from the ecosystem, from the amazing minds in the Spring team, and put into a product, put into a service that you can run and deploy and connect to your Rabbits, your Redis, your Postgres, your other. And you can do really powerful things, right? So I said it earlier today, when I have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When I've got Spring Boot in my tool belt, oh, I know how I could do that with Spring Boot. I know how to, you know, I can build a processor. But that's not always the best way. Sometimes you don't need to build a 12-factor, 15-factor app. Sometimes you just need to draw a line from this resource over to this resource. Maybe add a filter that says, I want to see all the logs that are coming off of this service. I want to see all the logs that are error because I want to send those over to something else. Right? I want to pipe all the access logs from some system because maybe we didn't have enough money to send all of our logs to Splunk. But maybe we could put in something like this. We could put in a data flow that was taking all the massive logs that we were generating and filtering and sending only the errors or the warns over to Splunk to reduce how much we were spending to index all of those things. We didn't need to index all the index.
That's huge.
This is
so
huge.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Splunk, Splunk's a great tool. Everybody's got to use it. A lot of companies have to use it for compliance reasons, but it can get expensive. So you're saying that Spring Cloud Dataflow is something that could help reduce your Splunk by only getting the things that you want.
Absolutely. We can connect to all sorts of things. I'm trying to find one of the pictures of the UI. And because there's some really cool stuff here.
Well, while you're talking about that, we talked about AI. I know that Spring Cloud Dataflow from, you know, drift detection, it's got pre-processing, things that have a lot of AI ML use cases. With Spring AI coming out, is that something that's going to be tied in with Spring Cloud Dataflow? Or
bottom line is absolutely, right? The data is there. Everybody's looking at how to consume it. So Spring AI today is about generative AI. Right? Mm-hmm. This chat interface that we've been given that OpenAI made really popular. And we have all these other models that we can now run on our platform. We can run them private. That's done. But AI, ML workloads have been doing a lot of other things that aren't generative. It's the biggest one, I think. Correct me if you think something else. But fraud detection. Like, hey, I'm sitting in a transaction from the Walgreens down the street on the credit card network, without saying names. And that credit card network is all over the globe. Right. Like, how do we know that this transaction over here at my Walgreens is not fraudulent? How do we know that that same credit card or another credit card from that same person on the other side of the planet, like what happens? How do we get that data into the right spot so we can make a decision? Because when you're doing a credit card fraud detection process, you've got milliseconds, right? The from when they swipe to when you've got to respond back to that card reader, I think that's like an 8-second turnaround. But what that means on a global scale is that you've only got so much time when you get to that part where it says, is this fraud? and it's going to score it. Is that fraud? You only have milliseconds at that point in the workflow in order to get it back in time so that that transaction at Walgreens is a thumbs up or thumbs down. So I think that is the number one workload, you know, at least that's on my radar for these AI ML workloads. And gotcha. That type of workload needs to be integrated with all sorts of data. And Spring AI, again, Spring AI today is really focused around the generative, but just like Spring Data, Spring AI is going to be that abstraction layer that allows us to start to do more things with these different AI and ML workloads.
And what do we've got? So is there really any need for interaction? Because we've got bits and bots talking about Green Plum. When you start talking about, you know, transactions, I start thinking of things like Gemfire. What are those interactions look like with Spring Cloud Dataflow? How do those work out?
So for what you're taking to production today with Green Plum or Gemfire or whatever is in production, it's not hard to imagine. You don't have to be a data science engineer. My kids could probably come up with something. That how else could we use the data that exists in the system? This is where Spring Cloud Dataflow makes it easy. This is where I can start to connect those ins and outs, those pipes. I can start to connect each one of those transactions to something else inside of my org or inside of the greater system. This is the key. We're, exposing and making it easier to connect these different types of data, these different data flows, which there's a good book. There's a good book about flow. From one of
the students.
It just disappears off the screen.
I'm trying. I have it sitting here.
For those listening on the podcast, Deshaun is looking for the physical book.
I disappeared. But I read the book and I'll make sure it gets into the show notes. But there's so many different ways that we're going to be using our data. Whatever you're doing with whatever database, right? Even your mailing list, right? The data that you get from your mailing list today, there's so much more value in it than there was yesterday because you have things like Spring Cloud Dataflow, because you have all these new patterns that we've seen others use, and we can make it easier to consume. I love what we do.
It is great. Great work. Well, and then maybe we could take a quick aside. Something I wanted to bring up, and I remember, because if I don't do it now, I'll forget, but it's a quick aside. We really wanted to talk about the Cloud Foundry Day New York summit coming up, and I think we're all going to be here. And I don't know, Deshaun, if you're going to be talking anything about Spring Cloud Dataflow there. I know you haven't accepted talk.
I'm not going to be talking about Spring Cloud Dataflow, but what I will do is if you're going to be there, what I will do is I'm going to wear a shirt that looks like this. It has this little logo on it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be hanging around with Nick and Nikki as much as possible. Look for us. And if you want to talk about Spring Cloud Dataflow at Cloud Foundry Day in New York in just a couple of short weeks, find us. Let's sit down and have lunch together in real life. And let's talk about some of the things that we can do. Let's talk about some of the things that I've seen our customers doing. And let me share. Let's have fun.
I'm super excited about Cloud Foundry Day. We're going to have some great talks there, but more importantly, getting to meet some of the users, getting the people, meet the community out there that's passionate about this. Can't wait to talk to you guys. Please come look us up. I'm not hard to miss. Look for the guy that looks like an old biker.
Yeah, and I believe the registration fee for the event is relatively low. I think it's maybe only $50 US. So it's not like it's not like you have to get a bunch of money just to get the ticket. So if you're in the area, it's definitely something to check out. And I already know some fairly interesting customer use cases coming through are going to be there. So definitely keep an eye out and register if you can. And now I will end our official sponsor segment and go back to our regular programming.
Bits and Bots is calling you out about your kids.
Yeah.
Wait.
Oh, I think about what Deshaun's kids doing stuff with Spring Cloud Dataflow.
It happens.
And even your kids could do this. Come on. He's saying your kids are probably better.
So my kids will never deploy active passive. So that's making sure. My kids will never deploy active passive. There's no reason. They didn't grow up being able to afford having hardware, having infrastructure just sit there. Right? Who has that kind of money these days? right? Nobody's going to say, oh yeah, we got more budget so you can stand up infrastructure that's in passive mode. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Nobody's doing that. I mean, infrastructure companies, they would love for you to go active passive, right? Mm-hmm. The cloud companies, yeah, do active passive. You know, put passive infrastructure in three regions. That'd be awesome. But we've moved beyond, right? My kids will never deploy active passive. I haven't introduced them to Spring Cloud Dataflow yet, but it's, of course it's coming, right? I think they're starting to understand the value of data.
And we did active passive. Active passive was one with auto scaling on the back end, which is one of the things I loved about Cloud Foundry was the ability to do that. Right. So, you know, when we did go to our passive side, it automatically scaled up. There wasn't really a whole lot that we had to do. So I get you on the active passive. Definitely the hardware and the hyperscalers want you to go active passive because they're just claiming infrastructure. But there's still some mindsets that I think are going to take long. You know, we talked about the whole, you know, getting your code out quicker. Cloud Foundry lets you do that, but you got to get around change management. That's a process and a mindset that has to change before you can really start going to this continuous deployment.
Yeah, like that whole thing, the active, passive, like what's your deployment strategy? Like how important is high availability? How important is it for your workload to be able to scale up to meet demand? How often do you have spikes, right? Is it Wednesday or Taco Tuesday? Is that when you spike? How often does that happen? Mm-hmm. And yeah, be able to adjust accordingly. But again, my pain and what I'm asking you and what I'm hoping to encourage everybody here is think about all the vectors, all the knobs that you have to turn. The thing that Cloud Foundry did for me and got me excited about was I could deploy a foundation and I had different workloads that spiked at different times. But I could have this infrastructure, I could have this density inside of a foundation or two foundations, right? I could do the global load balancing across different regions and I could have this HA and I could deploy. I could still do these canary deployments of my infrastructure. I could upgrade my foundation, upgrade tiles, upgrade stem cells in one region and then go to the other or not, right? I'm doing active-active. I'm talking about active-active and I can send traffic. If something's going on over here at my update, I'm able to handle it on the other side. Yep. But when that's not happening, I can handle it both. I can give my customers that best experience.
And we'll go ahead and answer on Boo's question here. So he hasn't tried Spring Cloud Dataflow, wants to play around with it. Is it bundled with TAP? So a couple different answers there. One, we've got Spring Cloud Dataflow is open source. You can go out and play with it as you see fit. It does come bundled in with what we're calling Tanzu Spring Runtime. So when you have TAP or TAS, you automatically get that TSR, the Tanzu Spring Runtime entitlement, which does come with Spring Cloud Dataflow. But it is also OSS out there. Feel free to, Nick, Deshaun, anything else y'all want to add?
Yeah, that's one of those. It's a product that's out there in the open source, similar to Spring Cloud Gateway, where there's an OSS version that's going to cover, you know, 80, 90% of your use cases. But then Spring Cloud Dataflow has a commercial version, just like Spring Cloud Gateway does, that adds a little bit more of the enterprise-grade features. Enterprise-grade, support.
Let's not forget the support. You know, if you want to get good support, go to the guys that wrote it.
So that's not a bad idea.
Well, and then I think from a TAS perspective or Cloud Foundry perspective, we do bundle that as an add-on tile. And it is part of, you know, you can do Spring Cloud Gateway, Spring Cloud Dataflow, Spring Cloud Services. Those are all additional value add for the Spring community within the TAS ecosystem that you can easily kind of Bosch, you know, deploy via Ops Manager and have that, experience loaded in your marketplace so you can easily click and consume them too.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to spin one of these up in our DACA foundation right now. So give me another minute or two. Let me know if it. I'll let you know if it actually works.
Awesome.
And I will say that, you know, when I build a foundation, Spring Cloud Services, Spring Cloud Dataflow, these are things that I put on there by default, because I very rarely meet job engineers that don't want those.
It's another tool in the tool belt. Yep. And here's the other piece is, when it's deployed as a tile on your foundation, it's supported, right? I don't have to, you know, break out the Elmer's glue and start to tie these things together. I can have a supported foundation covering my workflows, covering those ETL pipelines, for example. But I can also expose that data that's moving through my data foundation. I can expose it in a lot of really cool and interesting and valuable ways to other workloads.
And I can get it as easy as CF Create Service.
CF Create Service. And it always comes back to CF Create Service, doesn't it? That's where the real, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Yep. What else you got for us?
I don't have anything. I don't have anything else. I'd love to come back and show a fancy demo, but there's tons of great information. So we can close this one. I know you've got some links.
Yep. So we'll go ahead and start posting a couple links. So getting started guide. This is a great guide to go in, kind of walks you through Spring Cloud Dataflow, what it takes to get started. We have the project guide, which is all about Spring Cloud Dataflow on the project. And we'll go through and we'll put these back up again right before we end the show. The project page. So this is where you can find out where the versioning is, what the support dates are, commercial support, OSS support. Everything can be found on the project page. And then also, because we just did .NET last week, still towing .NET integrations for Spring Cloud Dataflow. Speaking of which, Deshaun, I've got this idea. Did you watch the .NET show?
Of course I did. I was there.
He was there. Yeah.
I was there because I told the story of my workloads where, you know, the workshop that I referenced at the beginning, we're going to stand up 50 databases. That workshop, that schema that we used, we actually connected to the same schema with .NET and Java because it didn't matter. The API was the same. We could implement it however we wanted. That was cool. But to circle back to Spring Cloud Dataflow, right? If I've got these pipelines, I can send that traffic to .NET. I can send that traffic. I could be consuming from those same sinks, those same buckets of data with .NET on the same foundation, right? We've got all sorts of avenues to go here. And the .NET episode from last week was, it touched me in my heart because it was really special because this is a big deal. When I first got into like the big enterprise, there was literally two different rooms. Is your workload running on Linux or is it running on Windows? Different data centers, different people, different tickets you had to open, different systems. And then so much waste, right? Another reason why I fell in love with Cloud Foundry, because I could have all those workloads on the same infrastructure working together.
Yeah, I had this idea. I'd like to get like Andrew and Martez and you and Dan on a show and call it like .NET Java Battle Royale.
We called it Dueling Laptops. That was the name of the workshop. Right. So I was doing it and it was Robert Cerchia, a friend of ours, a friend of mine, lifelong, over at SUSE. And he would do the .NET side. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna implement this API. Here's my first step. And then I would do the Java side. But the rooms, typically, there was a bunch of .NET developers and a bunch of Java developers, Spring developers. And we were doing the exact same thing, but we were facing each other. And it was just like it would be with us, right? It was dueling laptops. We're cracking jokes. Oh, hey, here's mine. It only takes one line in Spring Boot. And then he cracks back. Oh, but mine container's only 50 megs. But now I would love to do it again because my workloads with GraalVM and Spring Boot 3 and Spring Framework 6, my containers are going to be equal to or better as far as the container size and probably on the performance side too. So I would love to bring that back, but it's going to be a little bit off-sided.
You can even have like a betting thing going on while we're doing the show. I think that would be an awesome show.
It's fun. Dueling laptops at Robert Cerchia, we did it and it got repeated, right? So it's definitely a thing and it's fun. Like what we're doing, the language wars, like Kelsey Hightower, you know, somebody who's famous and I follow what he says. He's kind of bright in that way. He basically said like, it doesn't matter really what language you're using. You can do a lot of the things that you need to do in any language. Use the one that you're most productive with. And if you've got something like build packs, like in a platform, it'll go. It'll run. It'll be just fine.
That's the important part. Yeah. You don't have to choose infrastructure based on your technology now. Cloud Foundry, you can do it all in one place, one management, same updates, secure it, one place. That's the important part. But it's always fun to watch the technology wars, the stack wars happen.
Absolutely.
And me, I like to stir the pot a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's fun. We all have fun. So Cloud Foundry Day, let's gather around and let's compare stacks and mm-hmm. we'll talk trash and maybe we'll do some dueling laptops. Bring your laptop. I'm excited to see what you're working on, how you're getting in production. And yeah, and I'm excited to hear what are the new patterns? What's the new cool thing? Sometimes it's hard being an engineer and being proud of what you're doing. It was hard for me. I wasn't a big fan of tooting my own horn, but we need to toot your own horn. We need to toot your mm-hmm. horn. If you don't want to toot your own horn, talk to me. I will toot. I will be your hype man. Because in this job, I love what we do. And I love being able to go to conferences and share everything that we've learned. But I would much rather have somebody from this audience take my spot. I would much rather hear what's going on in their org than to have me up on stage. So I'm actively looking for people that are doing cool things. And maybe they just need a hand. We'll help. Yep. Raise your hand.
Absolutely. Now, you don't want to dueling laptops with me. I am not a developer. I need to get that made into a t-shirt.
I think I can make that happen.
I'm not a developer. I just play one on TV or something like that.
I am not a developer. No.
But I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night.
I help keep the lights on. That's what I do.
Yeah. Running the business with Cloud Foundry. That's said that a lot. We're just over here running the business. That's all. I do want to point out and thank you to everyone viewing right now. We hit triple digits, so right now we're at 112. Woo-hoo! So right, I think that's the our new peak of live viewers. So thank you very much.
That's fantastic. For everybody that's watching, like, thank you, and don't stop by just watching. Like, if you've got questions, like you guys have heard me say before, if you come to my house for dinner and you leave hungry, that's your fault. If you're here in a live stream and you've got questions, you've got things that you'd like to see, you'd like an episode to contain on this topic, like, let us know. Don't leave Absolutely. Hungry. Like, this is mm-hmm. your chance. We're here. We're live. We're doing it live. Like, let us know. Because it's amazing. Cloud Foundry is amazing. The data service is
perfect pitch.
Amazing. And yeah, and there's a lot of cool things that are happening. I'd like to know more about what you're doing. And I'd also like to help. We want to bring you the great details, the great demos, the great topics that you want to hear. So yeah, don't leave hungry. Let us know.
That's a great segue. Cloud Foundry Weekly on LinkedIn. If you have questions, go post them there. We'll make sure we get them answered on the show. If you have an idea for a show, go post it up there. Nick, myself, Shashan, you got questions, come look at us on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. We'll go ahead and we'll roll kind of Deshaun's information here. So we've got Deshaun on LinkedIn. We got his Twitter. You know, we've got Deshaun.com. And of course, always spring office hours. By the way, you guys are jerks. You got me with your April Fool's joke. I was pissed. I saw that. I was like, no. And then I realized that y'all were messing with us and I got angry. So you got me.
It was a little nervous. So on April 1st, we said, hey, it's our last spring office hours. We're in our third season now, me and Dan Vega. And it's been a wonderful ride. But we announced it as our last spring office hours episode. And I almost like felt bad because the DMs started right away. Like, is this really your last one? But like, what about? And yeah. Before we started the show, like people were logged in and were waiting. I was like, what's going on? What happened? It was fun. And even like into the show, you know, 45 minutes into the show, people are still asking like, is this really the last episode? So we had to remind everybody again, it's not the last episode. We will be back. It's my favorite time of the week. And now it's got a close competitor. Right? This Cloud Foundry Weekly and Spring Office Hours together.
It's like peanut butter and jelly, right?
Two great shows. Peanut butter and jelly, yeah. Right? Because there's no better place to run your spring workloads than Tanzu. And yeah, it just makes sense. So if I started
something... And me and Nick get to come on Spring Office Hours, although I am not a developer.
Absolutely.
Like, but I played one on TV.
Right? I do play one on TV.
Here's the thing, right? All of the benefits and... Right, we've done a CF push on the show, but it would be wonderful to kind of like do an episode, and we could do it on either one or both, showing like why Tanzu is the best place to run your Spring and your .NET, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. to show that why it is, because like they were thinking of each other, right? Yep. It was destiny. This is the best place. And again, when we bring in data and we talk about software supply chains, we're bringing all that to the table. It just makes sense. We could, of course, do it all ourselves. But why? Right? That's not what your company is paying for. That's not their bread and butter. Why would you invest all this time into a DIY when you have this easy button?
Yeah. Right. Why do you want to do things the hard way? That makes no sense.
Focus on is it just important things.
Maybe somebody's just got to prove to themselves that they can do it. We're going to go do this the hardest way possible instead of doing it the easy way.
I've done it. Right. I've done it.
I think our next co-session or proposed co-session should be digging into the intro to Spring AI video that Dan just released.
Yep.
Yeah. And then how we can build a app live and then run it on this whole Gen AI for Taz thing.
We absolutely should do that. And that could be on both. That's definitely, I think, a next step, because the AI, it's the Gen AI stuff is so easy to consume because of Spring AI, especially on Taz, because of the tile. Like, it's easy, right? Yep. The fear and the stuff, like, here's an easy path to what you're trying to do securely. Yeah, we should absolutely show it. There's so many things that we need to show. There's just not enough time. So, yeah, let us know what's the most important, and we'll do that.
Well, we're coming up on the end of time. So,
I love this.
Nick, I'm out next week. I'm going on vacation. I'm going to be on a beach somewhere, not thinking of any of this. You're doing next show. You're doing next show by yourself. What's up for the next show?
So we're going to do a crossover of Tanzu Talk and Cloud Foundry Weekly next show. So we're be bringing on Michael Cote, and we have a theme, but I can't announce it yet. So next Thursday, we'll know. But something is being released, perhaps on a Tuesday next week. But we're going to talk about it Thursday, and Cote is going to be on the show, and we'll go from there.
Like for those of the audience that hasn't heard or seen Cote, you will definitely want to join in. He has this amazing ability to consume hours worth of information, and then in the last 3 minutes of the show, he'll say, "So here's what I heard," and he summarizes it way better. AI has nothing on this guy. Yeah. He knows how to summarize and bring the important parts up to the front, and it's a superpower. But also his delivery and his questions,
engaging.
He's just amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, he was a rock star yesterday on the Tanzu Redefined, for sure.
Yeah, he has all of it that I would love to get someday.
Right. And I guess we should remind folks to like and subscribe to all of our channels. That's greatly appreciated. LinkedIn, Twitter, our Cloud Foundry Weekly YouTube channel. We have cloudfoundryweekly.com is our podcast channel. So we take all of these live streams and make them a podcast. So if you like to listen to them.
Oh,
yeah. I wonder where we got that idea. You can consume all these in podcast format if you like to listen on your way to work or working out or whatever you do. We'll be there.
And don't forget to hit that subscribe button, because we are talking about doing things on the channel other than just the weekly live. So, getting some people that want to do some of these, Deshaun, a perfect example would be, we weren't able to do a demo today. Maybe we want to put a demo up on the channel of Spring Cloud Dataflow. That will be in addition to the weekly podcast. So make sure you hit subscribe so you can get notified when we start putting new content out. Me and Nick, we're still kind of battling our way through this. We're learning, but things are going to get better. And as always, man, we really appreciate our audience. We broke a record today. So makes me so happy. This was a great way to end the week for me and go on vacation.
Absolutely. You've earned it. Nikki, you've done so much. Nick, you've done so much. You guys, I'm glad that you're on our side. Tanzu is lucky to have you both. Keep up the good work. Thanks for having me here. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm looking forward to doing a lot more of this fun stuff together.
Amen. All right, everybody. Well, everybody, the sign off. CF bye.
Bye.